A new wave of progressive lawmakers took office in 2021 after knocking off incumbent lawmakers and Democratic establishment-backed candidates in their primaries. They came to Albany with big, bold agendas, of which some items got done and others did not. To reflect on what did and did not get done, as well as how the sausage was made this year, we're checking in with Assemblymember Emily Gallagher, a Brooklyn Democrat who came to office after beating a 48-year incumbent in last year's Democratic primaries. Welcome back to the show, Assemblymember.
Thank you so much. I'm really delighted to be here.
We're delighted to check in with you again. So, shortly after the legislative session ended in June, you and another handful of Democratic Socialist lawmakers held a press conference to denounce the legislature's failure to pass some big-ticket policy items, including a state takeover of the health insurance industry, broader eviction protection measures, and changes to how parole is granted. From your perspective, which of these priorities was the closest to getting done this year, and why do you think it might have come up short?
You know, it's hard for me to speculate too closely because there's not always information shared with all the members about why something is or is not coming to the floor. I do think that the priority on criminal justice reform makes me believe that we were probably closest to getting more parole reform changes. But like I said, it's hard for me to guess. There's so many things that are happening behind the scenes that I'm not privy to, despite the fact that I'm a legislator.
Well, yeah, I'm glad you brought that up because that was something I was curious about, which was, you know, during your first legislative session, did you find like you understood why decisions were being made and who was making them? Or, like you say, is the process so secretive that even duly elected state lawmakers who would, I guess, theoretically be in charge of this process are shut out from some of the decision making?
Yeah, well, you know, we had a triple threat going in that it was COVID, it was remote, and, you know, so many of the assembly members were freshmen, so we didn't necessarily have the knowledge going in to how things worked. And because we were remote, it was difficult to see the workings of the assembly. Being there a little later in the spring, I was able to see, you know, and get to know members of the staff, members of the different departments, and learn much more closely about what goes on in that facility. But, you know, when we were at home, there was a big disadvantage because we weren't in the inner workings of every day. So we didn't have people stopping by our office to, you know, ask us a question. There would have to be like a scheduled call. And, you know, I think also even being in conference in person was so much more illuminating than doing it remotely because we were able to have those conversations and really get to know the personalities and the have, you know, personal conversations with our colleagues. So to know what is going on in Albany, I think will be easier when we are all there in person. I think that the biggest challenge was just that we were being thrown into a system that is very tightly wound. It works like a clock, and you know we were in a different time zone basically. So we had that disadvantage. So it's hard for me to say if it was the COVID year or being a freshman that really was influencing what I was privy to and what I was not privy to in terms of information.
Well, part of the reason the assembly runs like, I guess, a well-oiled machine or like a clock is that institutional staff that's there that, I guess, nominally works for the assembly majority. But there's also a critique that some of this centralized staff is making kind of their own decisions and sort of running things, especially the hollowed members of program and council. What was your experience like with these staffers? Did you find them to be helpful and empowering you, or did you sometimes find that you were at odds with these people who theoretically serve you?
Yeah, I think that Again, I'm just starting to get to know them, mm-hmm. know their stories, know their perspectives that they're coming from, know what the goals of the members that run those different departments have. I think that one of the challenges for me was in coming from advocacy, I have a very particular on-the-ground perspective of what I want to see happen in terms of policy because I've seen the result play out in my district and I've seen how sometimes laws or lack of laws create major stumbling blocks that, you know, can be anything from inconvenient to life-destroying. So I think that when I'm interfacing with the staff, they're coming from a much more, they're coming from a different perspective where they're looking at the legal issues, they're looking at how this impacts other laws that we have written, how we have different, we're coming there with different perspectives. Mm-hmm. So I think part of it has been, you know, frustrating for me because I am coming from a real sense of urgency to get certain things passed because I've watched, you know, especially around traffic and street safety, I've seen so many deaths in my community. I've really felt that personally. So I have a sense of urgency there, and I think that there's like a different timeline in Albany where the folks who are really charged with crafting the details of the law or approving the details of the law, they're really wanting to look at every angle very, very closely. And the timeline is just different. So for me, that's been challenging. But I definitely think that, you know, as I grow in the assembly, I'll be able to understand better where people are coming from and maybe, you know, come more ready for the fight over certain topics. Now, did I find it confusing? Yes, I did. But it definitely, you know, it's something that needs to be unraveled, like I said, in person. And I'm really looking forward to hopefully us all being in person this year.
In case you're just joining us, we're checking in with Assemblymember Emily Gallagher, a Democratic Socialist representing part of Brooklyn, who's talking with us about navigating the job of a state lawmaker during her first year in office. So while there were definitely some, I think, end-of-session disappointments, this session, I think, should not be overlooked in terms of really the big policies that did get done, whether it's marijuana legalization, something that wasn't even on the table 3 years ago, or the excluded workers fund in the state budget, or changes to solitary confinement, and the list can really go on. But I'm curious, what was your proudest accomplishment of your first 7 months in office?
Yeah, wow, what a great question. I definitely felt very proud of being a part of the body that passed all the legislation you listed. I think for me, two of the things that really will be felt deeply in my district are the Excluded Workers Fund and the emergency rent protections. I think that those two things, you know, they're really life or death situations that are so immediate that they were huge achievements, especially because there were internal discussions about whether or not, you know, or how these things should be done. And I really felt proud that, especially with the Excluded Workers Fund, that we were able to put a population in our community that is so frequently overlooked and so frequently shortchanged, that we were able to put them in a position for doing better. Now, for me, what will be, you know, something I'm looking forward to and that I'm really urgently watching and fighting for is oversight on all of these very critical pieces of legislation. We have to get that money into people's pockets, and I'm very glad that we are having an oversight committee hearing on the emergency rental assistance program. I really think that that is absolutely necessary, because so often we create programs that are meant to help the most vulnerable members of the communities, but they just don't get into their hands, or it becomes extra difficult to access them. And I think, you know, I'm alarmed to see the new things that were added into the excluded workers program. And I really hope that we adjust that swiftly to make sure that we are impacting the broadest number of our community members, because we can pass wonderful legislation, but if the rollout doesn't make sense, or if the rollout is prohibitive, it's not accomplishing the goals of the legislation. So for me, the proudest accomplishments are also the ones I am the most nervous about, because the story isn't over yet for those goals. And I think that's something as legislators that we really have to hold on to. It is not done when we vote something in. We have to get it past the governor's desk, and we have to make sure that the rollout has really strong oversight, because so often things fall apart at the final hour.
And after a quick break, we'll continue our discussion with Assemblymember Emily Gallagher about her first year on the job in Albany. When we get back, we'll talk with the Brooklyn Democratic Socialist about the oversight role of the legislature, finding staff from non-traditional backgrounds, and much more.
Support for the Capitol Press Room is provided by New York State United Teachers, a union of professionals in education, human services, and healthcare.
In case you're just joining us, we're continuing our conversation with Assemblymember Emily Gallagher about her first year in office. And before the break, we were talking with the Democratic Socialist from Brooklyn about how legislative intent can sometimes be misinterpreted or just bungled by the executive branch. So I was curious how you think the legislature's oversight power should take shape in New York. For instance, are we having enough hearings? Do we need more hearings? Should the legislature be using its subpoena power more freely?
The subpoena power is something that's really an important piece of the puzzle, and I think it's underused in our government. I think the state government does have powers that it doesn't exercise, and I would like to see a government that takes those opportunities to really protect the things that we found important enough to bring to the floor and to put into law. So I am one who really believes that oversight is a big part of transparency and good government. And I really am anxious to see us exercise it more.
When we talked in September of last year, you were in the process of trying to hire your legislative staff, and you were making a conscious effort, I think, not to fill your office maybe with the traditional choices that previous lawmakers or lawmakers around the state might make. How did that end up manifesting itself, and how has it worked out so far?
I'm so glad you asked that, because I really feel that my staff has been the true heart of this work. And one of the things that I really want to celebrate is how much work the legislative and office and community affairs staff does, because the work is actually with the people, right? And in our search for employees, we really did want to get a broad pool of candidates. I think, you know, what we did find was people came to us who were compelled to work in government because of their personal experience with government, and they were excited about helping to co-create a government that was more responsive to the lived experience of how government plays out. So what we ended up doing was we hired 3 full-time people in the beginning, knowing that one of our full-time folks was considering a grad school career that would start this summer. But we wanted to do that so that we could see where our gaps were in the office. And I'm really excited to say that my one staffer, she is pursuing higher education in California. So we were able then to take the gaps that we had and really look for people who could fill those gaps. And we are starting now with community affairs, people who have experience not only with the city and government agencies from working in there and now want to be a check on that and make sure that the issues go through cleanly. But we also have members of our staff whose lives have been greatly impacted by programs or lack of programs for their family and their community. And one of my favorite conversations I had was with one of my staffers who had taken some time to reflect on what policies had impacted his life and made his life what it was. And he talked at length. He grew up in a different state, and he talked at length about how a tax code had resulted in his school, which was a low-income school, having almost all their funding slashed, having the teacher shortage, having school book shortage, and how that impacted his education and how that impacted what he felt for his future. So those are the kind of people I really like to see in government, because it is not an ideological or a thought experiment for them. It is not just ideas on paper. It is a lived experience of how these decisions impact real people's lives and real people's futures. So I couldn't be happier with the folks I have on my team. And I have got to say, if I can brag for a minute, that I have been hearing community members, even community members who were, you know, not necessarily supportive of my candidacy, that we are getting so much done so quickly and with such empathy and respect for our community members. And I know that that is the result of people being here for the reasons that brought them here. And it is so exciting to go out into the street, and literally almost every day, someone comes up to me and says to me, "Oh my gosh, your office changed my life." Like, we get emails every day. The biggest thing that we are constantly working on is unemployment and helping people get their unemployment funds, which is just a Sisyphean task for these folks. And the number of times that we have gotten an email saying, "After your office called the Department of Labor, I got my money and now I can move forward in my life." Like, there's no greater achievement. No legislative achievement that I will have in my future could match the knowledge that we're essentially saving people's lives by helping them access the services that they need.
So another item that you and I talked about in September as you were preparing to take office was, I guess, a preemptive dissatisfaction with the way Albany, quote unquote, works. And you talked about the limited transparency and the lack of power in the hands of individual lawmakers, something that we've talked about already in this interview. And obviously some of that is going to be a product of the remote work that was doing. And
right.
It's just going to happen. And at the time, though, you expressed some optimism that this status quo could be disrupted, even with Assembly Speaker Carl Hastie calling the shots. Do you still feel that there can be positive change in terms of the operations of the chamber with Speaker Hastie at the helm?
I think there can be. I appreciate the position that Speaker Hastie is in. There is a broad range of perspectives in the Democratic caucus. And we really, you know, we all are fighting for our districts. We are all coming from different places, and literally and figuratively, in terms of our perspective on what we want. So I know that often Carl is making a compromise between the two sides of the conference. Or, you know, if you break it down, there's probably six sides of the conference, right?
Yeah.
So I definitely think there is space for a new status quo, but the first thing we have to do is get everyone comfortable with the idea that transparency brings trust, and that transparency actually disarms weapons rather than creates them. I think there's a lot of fear for everyone that, you know, sometimes the situation might not play well, and they're trying to navigate that situation on their own. But I think the more that we bring things out open, and the more that we allow sunlight to disinfect, I think that is what is going to really make New York State the best state in the country. The more transparent that we can make our government, the better it will function, because we will help people trust the government again. I think that the reality is that the distrust for the government has so much to do with the secrecy that happens with what is passing, what isn't passing, and why some things move and don't move. So I think that when things don't move, that we owe our communities explanations about why. And that's what's going to build faith and build better policy as well, right? We need to be able to believe that the government is doing its job. And the best way to do that is to show what we're doing that's an achievement, but also what we're working on and what we're struggling with. And I do think that that matters. And I think that that is something that is so different from the status quo that it does take some time to adjust. But I do think that there has been a lot of energy around the freshman class this year. And I think that even some of the more senior members were excited to see the new perspectives and the enthusiasm that we were bringing to the work. And I think that that enthusiasm is contagious, and it's effective.
So I think there was clearly this affinity among the new lawmakers, especially among the Democratic Socialist lawmakers. But I was curious whether you struck up any friendships with lawmakers maybe outside that bubble or even across the aisle. And obviously with the caveat that it's tough to breed new friendships when you're all chatting remotely for the most part.
Yeah, I've actually made some great relationships with more senior members. And I've been really, really excited about some of the relationships where I do feel like I can approach them and ask them questions coming from all over the state. And it was very exciting when we did go back for the end of session to actually meet so many of the folks that I've been talking to on the phone or texting with. But I have found quite a few folks, especially folks that tend to, you know, be more on my ideological wavelength, of course. But I have found so many people who have been really open to me and wanting to get to know me. So that's been a really nice benefit, because there's no instruction manual for being an assembly member. And, well, there is, but it's like more of a style guide, right? So to be able to say, like, hey, how do I push a bill forward that I'm trying to get onto the floor? To be able to have people that I can go to and ask that, who can give me their two cents or who I should be talking to, that's been really, really helpful.
Are there any senior lawmakers that immediately come to mind or examples of that manifesting itself?
Oh, yeah. I do have some very good friends. You know, it's hard to shout out one and not another. You know what I mean?
They won't take it personally.
I definitely I've gotten a lot of support from, like, Harvey
Epstein in Manhattan.
Yes. Linda Rosenthal is incredible. Eileen, Ron Kim has been so great. Deborah Glick has really reached out and worked to help me understand things. And also, she is so funny. I just really enjoy talking to her. I'm trying to think who else has been really helpful. Latrice Walker helped me get my first bill through, my first election law bill. And, you know, it's been really interesting to see how different people run their committees. I really like how during this COVID situation, Al Sturpe really allowed us to talk through what was going on with small businesses and brainstorm together. And another thing that I've really appreciated, too, is on the Drug and Alcohol Policy Committee, I can tell everybody on that committee is so in touch with the core reason why we're there, which is to help people who are vulnerable and who, you know, need resources to get through what they're going through. Also, Nellie Rozek has been so helpful. The first thing she did was have a call with me to instruct me on how the committee works, who the lawyers are, how I can talk about a bill, and I know her door is always open. So that's like a short list.
That was a good list.
Those are, I've been so, so impressed with the hospitality that people have offered me. And of course, you know, I do feel like Carl has a lot on his plate, but he is open to hearing from me for whatever I need, you know, whether it's, I broke my leg like right before session started and Carl and Crystal were very supportive of my needs and navigating my severe health concern.
How's your leg
so
now?
In a way, it was really good for me to, it was actually my ankle, but, you know, my ankle's part of my leg.
How's your ankle now?
I'm in physical therapy now. I'm getting it back together, but it was a blessing in that respect to have session remote because I could not move around.
Well, finally, just before I let you go, I have to know, while you represent Brooklyn, your ties are to the Rochester area originally, so have you made it to Wegmans since you and I last talked in September of last year, or have you been on a bit of a Wegmans drought?
Oh, yes, I have. I have made it to Wegmans, and I have actually even gone. Of course, I go to Wegmans when I visit my family, but I now have the added fun when I go back to Rochester of having colleagues that I love that I get to visit too. So, you know, I got to go bowling with Damond Meeks, you know,
Rochester,
that was really fun.
Yep.
Yeah, I absolutely love the Rochester delegation. I think that they are really just such a breath of fresh air and really bringing so many of the deep concerns of the district to Albany. And I'm so excited to get to work with them. And, you know, I'm glad that I have a resource in Albany who can bring me whatever Wegmans cookies or products aren't making it to the shelves of the Brooklyn Wegmans, because, you know, it's just one store here. So I can't get all of the special products, and it's nice to know I have people to ask at any given time to bring me those things.
Well, we've been speaking with Emily Gallagher. She is a freshman assembly member from the Brooklyn area. Assembly member, thank you so much for making the time, and congrats on your first 7 months on the job.
Thank you. I am having a great time. I love this job, and I will always be ready, willing, and able to talk to you, Dave.
Well, we'll make it happen sooner than later.
Thank you.
Support for the Capitol Press Room is provided by Destiny USA. Shopping, dining, and entertainment all in one location. For more information, go to www.destinyusa.com.